Way to go.
And open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. It's April 14th. First order of business is getting through some work sessions that we had held over from last Thursday due to timing on the fiscals. If I could look at yours with you. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2800. That is the Farm to School bill. We already adopted the amendments.
Right.
Those were the dash twos. And we were waiting for the fiscal for half an hour, if you remember, and it's back.
We got the amendment in?
Yeah, amendment's already been adopted.
Dash one or dash twos, Mr.
Dash
Chair?
Dash twos were what we rolled in.
And so all we need is the fiscal report, and we're ready to go.
We got it back, so now we're ready to roll.
Okay.
So you're...
Let me get a motion so I can get into discussion on it.
Okay, that's okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt House Bill 2800 and the dash two amendments into the committee, into the bill.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2800 is amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation
pass.
And that the bill be referred
to
the committee.
You've got to refer to prior reference.
To Ways and Means. So, discussion. Representative Winger.
Well, I just, the staff measure summary references the dash one amendment, so I just want to be clear about what happened.
Did you get the dash two staff measure summary? Should be in your packet.
Yeah, they're both in here.
Oh.
So we're just referencing what the dash ones do, but we're not adopting them.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative
Gilden. Excuse.
Representative Rosen.
Aye.
Representative Shoff.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vanderman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Schultz.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent as amended to Committee on Ways and Means. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2215. This is our expenditure limitation for the firefighting fund. It also has been amended to include the dollar for dollar 50% relationship from dollar one and is also sitting here ready to head on to, in this case, Ways and Means again.
Now you've got the...
Now, we are putting this in reverse order with respect to the importance from our committee, correct?
Yeah, you're right.
Already, you've already got this in.
The order in which... That's okay. I don't care.
Mr. Chair, I move
House
Bill...
They're going to different Ways means subcommittees, so
that's
this
true.
Is the first
yeah.
going
okay.
to...
Yeah. Okay.
That's why we were hung up for
that's
a month,
yeah, I know,
a month and a half and 3 hours of testimony. And Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2215 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and referred to Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2215 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wingard.
I just simply want to state that I hope the Ways and Means Committee takes this bill very seriously. It has my strong support. Not that that is the reason why they do it. Actually, I should be quiet
yeah.
to take it very seriously. But I do hope that it moves.
Yeah. Further discussion? Okay. Ezra, please call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Gilley.
Excuse?
Representative Rosen.
Aye.
Representative
Joshua.
Aye.
Representative
Winger. Aye.
Vice Chair
Benham.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Green.
Aye.
Chair Clinton.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. It's going to open a work session on House Bill 2924. This is a bill that appropriates money to the low-income senior and WIC program for farmers markets usage. And we finished the public hearing. We didn't do a work session. We don't have any amendments. As far as I know, let me just double-check that. We don't have any amendments, do we?
No.
So... would take a motion to get into discussion on it.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2924 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill referred to Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2924 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
I would.
Representative Van Horn.
Chair Clem, I really endorse this highly. It's for children.
Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Excused.
Representative Rowe.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Wayne.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Horn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye.
We'll
suspend the rules on all of them
okay.
at the same time, or go through them. Motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Ways and Means.
We can do it now if you want, sir.
Yeah, please. Representative Roblin.
I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Gilliam to vote on House Bill 2800, House Bill 2215, and House Bill 2924.
Representative Robin moves suspension of the rules for the purposes of allowing Representative Gilliam to vote. Any objection?
Your glasses.
Oh. Yeah, I can't see. Seeing no objection. Ezra, House Bill 2800, would you record the vote?
Representative Gilliam?
It's farm to school.
They all pass.
Good morning.
They're all going to Ways and Means. And this is
farm to school. They're all yes votes.
You might want to think
about
it.
You've been told how to vote, now vote.
Is everyone done?
No.
We've all voted.
Aye.
Thank you. House Bill 2215, that's a dollar for dollar from dollar one for the firefighting fund.
Aye.
And 2924.
Does he have to ask me?
It's okay.
And the 2924 is the fruit stand, farmer's market, low income, seniors and women, infant children could get more vouchers at the farmer's markets.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Aye.
The WIC.
WIC. Thank you. I'm going to open.
Yep.
Open a work session on House Bill 2222. We've already adopted the amendments on this.
This 2222.
This is the R&E surcharge on fishing licenses from $2 to $4 for restoration and enhancement of the fisheries.
Yep.
And we have already adopted the amendment.
We've adopted the dash twos, which made sure they weren't double charged inadvertently.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2222 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill referred to Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2222 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wingard.
For the reasons that I discussed in the last committee hearing in which we took up this bill, which I will not repeat, I am a no vote.
Any further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam.
Nope.
Representative Rose.
Aye.
Representative Chopper.
Aye.
Representative Wayne.
Nope.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. I think we'll wait so we can get into the 2743. Okay. Should I need to carry it over again? I'm going to carry over House Bills 2999. We still had a kind of a late amendment and have to get the fiscal back, and House Bill 2220, we need to get the subsequent referral of Ways and Means off of there, hopefully. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2743.
That's all I got. Good. Those are the weakest readers who have ever left the house.
And Representative Krieger is going to lead us off. It's his bill. He's going to talk to us about it. And then we've got a list of members of the public here to testify.
Going
to acknowledge the receipt of some written testimony from John Anhorn from Medford. And Craig Starr. Representative Krieger, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm State Representative Wayne Krieger from District 1, Southern Oregon. Thank the committee for taking time to hear the bill. House Bill 2743 is meant to do one thing, and that is level the playing field and give equal opportunity to every archer, rifle hunter, and black powder hunter, that opportunity, that equal opportunity to draw tags in certain units. And I want to make sure we understand from the beginning, as the chair and committee members know, a lot of the drafting that was done this year did not really catch what you wanted to have the bill say, and this one really didn't reach that. So you'll be seeing some amendment that really changes it. It really restricts it to three units on the South Coast where we seem to be having a problem. It's an area that the department had looked at prior in 2005 to do a similar type thing, has backed away. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the background and what kind of led me to go where we are. In 2007, I asked for statistical information from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife on hunter success with bows and rifles. And remember now, as one of the changes is that this does not mean that the archers aren't going to have their own season or they're going to have to hunt in our areas at the same time. They still get their August season during the rut. They indicated that the archer bow hunter had a success rate. Now, this is a statewide one, just different in different units, but it averaged 12% for the archers and 17% in certain units. Archers, resident, non-resident, can buy a tag every year without drawing. They just buy a tag where the guy with a rifle has to get into drawing to get a tag. A rifle hunter has to apply in those drawings that would draw a tag somewhere between the third and fourth year, which means he's going to have somewhere around a 48% success rate, because if you take 4 times the 12 is 48% that he will get over that 3 to 4 years. Where if the rifle hunter gets one tag, that's 17%. So their odds actually over a period of time is 3 to 4 times what it is for a rifle hunter. The rifle hunter, as I said, is going to get that one tag in that period of time, and I don't consider that as a fair and equitable. Yeah. The experienced, well-equipped archer experience a much higher success rate, and you could say the same for rifle hunters that do well, know the area, and really get out there. A friend of mine at Gold Beach has killed his 5th consecutive elk this year, and I have no doubt he will continue because he knows what he's doing, he's got the best equipment, and he has access on property. What's strange is that a non-resident archer can get a tag every year in those units, but a person who lives and is a resident of the state of Oregon cannot. That, to me, just doesn't make any sense at all. Felons who can't hunt with a rifle can get a tag every year. That doesn't make sense. And at the same time, my county has the highest percentage of veterans and seniors in the state of Oregon, and not by just a little bit. Brookings is almost 70%. The majority of those seniors and the majority of the veterans by far would like to hunt with a rifle. That's what they have always done. They're older. They haven't changed over. And they have to draw in every third to fourth year while the archers get a tag every year. As I said, you need to realize that archers are, in fact, younger. And many young people took up archery because there was more opportunity to hunt, and the seniors can't get around. And I see where my son works at Freeman Marine down there, more and more of the young guys are going to archery, not because they want to hunt archery, because it's the only way they can get a tag. If you look back 50 years, you realize archers were given an advantage over rifle hunters for very good reasons. At the time, longbows and a few compound bows were the only real equipment available. They were not real accurate in the hands of most archers at the time. They just weren't that proficient. They were limited, most often to shots at fewer than 25 yards. Arrows are made of wood and broadheads, antique by today's standards, and their success was much, much less than it is today. Kind of what else has changed during my Oregon State Police days as I watched the equipment and technology advance beyond what I could have ever envisioned. I was out there with them for 28 years. Compound bows that have let off from 6,200 pounds are capable of being shot accurately at 50 yards. Arrow shafts made of the latest carbon fiber material for faster flight. Sights with practice that allow devoted good archers to place arrows nearly as accurate as a rifle. Broadheads made of the toughest metals known. Sharp as the finest steel and capable of penetrating bone. Camouflage clothing. Now, earlier on, I think it was probably the archers that were the ones that really started bringing in the camouflage technology that you see today. They were the ones out in front because they needed to get closer, and this is one of the things. Scent lock clothing, scent lock sprays that keep the animal from being able to smell you. Face masks, wind direction devices, all designed to make the archer invisible. There are elk bugling game calls that are so realistic that nearly every bullet can be fooled and called within shooting distance. Archers now have a companion who does the calling, and once the bull answers, they place the archer between the elk and the caller, and they pull that bull past the archer. It's kind of a new technology the last 10, 15 years, but it has greatly increased success. The new bows have sights that allow the archer to know exactly which pin to use for the distance he'll be shooting. There are dampening devices that virtually eliminate all noise. And most of all, I think the thing that has really changed is the pocket-sized range finder that allow the archer to know the exact yardage to his target and thus use the proper sight to ensure a hit. All this new equipment and devices give an advantage to an archer. In 5 years, an archer would have an opportunity to hunt approximately 130 days over a three to four year period. During that same time, a rifle hunter is going to get somewhere between 5 and 9 days. There's no way that you can say that that is equitable and fair. You want to have an opportunity to be out there. It's not how successful you are. I don't know how we get kids to start hunting if they can't get a tag. That's not equitable. A couple of years ago, I submitted the mentor bill. Everybody talks about how wonderful it was. We got projected over 5,000 kids this year that will be able to go out their first time with an adult and hunt off that adult tag. If those adults in my area can't draw a tag, how are those kids going to get out there? They can't. Seniors my age only draw a tag once, like I say, once or twice maybe, before we get to the age where you really can't get out there. Next time around, you know, I'm going to be 69. If I got to wait 3 to 4 years, I'm 71, 72. During that same time, that archer is going to be getting a tag everywhere. He's going to get somewhere between 3 and 6 tags while I'm waiting. And I don't think that that's equitable. And can we wonder why some of our hunting numbers are reduced to hunters? That's one reason. There isn't access. So in my own mind, we were looking at what we could do to make it equitable. And you got to remember the word equitable, because I'm going to be talking to what statute says about that. We need to be talking about the opportunity to hunt, not just the success percentages. There is a direction for the Department of Fish and Wildlife in this bill, the amendments, and I'm going to read that to you, that provide, I think, a more equitable. The new Section 1 would say, notwithstanding other provisions of the wildlife laws, the State Fish and Wildlife Commission, by rules, shall establish a pilot program to equitably distribute hunting opportunity for elk in the Power, Sixes, and Chetco units among hunters using bows and hunters using rifles for the 2010, 11, and 12 hunting seasons. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife should report to the 2013 Legislative Assembly on the results of the pilot program. There is going to be a new section, too, that has to do with the reporting. They're doing the reporting online now of your success. They did not get back what they needed on reports, so we've got to have an incentive in there for them to call in their success so they can calculate the season for the following year. That will be an amendment that's coming. That will basically be the bill. It's going to be a pilot program. It's going to be confined to the South Coast. They're still going to have all their extra hunts before and after and in between after the rifle season. There'll be no change on the east side. And in the future, if you're going to have a reduction in the number of people that hunt with a rifle simply because they can't get tags, but you're going to see that number climb on the other side. So what happens is, if you have a given sustainable number of elk in a unit, let's say it's 200 that you can harvest, and all of a sudden you get to that harvest rate where you're up 210, 220, you want to cut back. And if that's a draw unit for the rifle hunter and it's wide open, which these are, all the reductions have to come out of the rifle side because they don't draw. So as their number continues to go up, it disproportionately means that you're going to have an advantage. In 2008, and I'm going to use the 6's unit, that's where I am. I was kind of surprised at the statistics. 215 rifle hunters, 234 bow hunters. The rifle hunters took 101 bulls. According to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the archers took 87. That's kind of surprising because that means that your percentage rate for a rifle hunters was 47%. Your percentage for archers was 37%, way beyond that 12% I talked about. And that's why some of those units, now is the time to look at it before it gets completely out of hand. I want to read you, committee members, some things that I do a lot of reading on statutes and stuff, kind of interesting. I want to read you parts of ORS 496.012. And I would hope that the department's listening. I did tell them I was going to read it. Number three, there are seven points listed there. And it talks about what the department is to do or the agency. Number three, to permit an orderly and equitable, the word equitable, utilization of available wildlife. The law already tells them to be doing what we're asking them to do, and they have not been doing it. To develop and maintain public access in the lands and waters of the state and the wildlife resources thereon. Maintain access. They don't maintain access equitably for everybody to those resources. That they're not doing. To make decisions that affect wildlife resources of the state for the benefits of the wildlife resources and to make the decisions that allow for the best social, economic, and recreational utilization of wildlife resources by all user groups. They're not doing it. If they would simply follow what the statute is, I wouldn't have had to done this. It doesn't have to play one user group against the other. Of course, if someone has a great advantage, not only in the length of time, but success in some of those units over time, it's obvious that they're going to squeal. But they can't counter what the law already says they're supposed to be doing and are not doing. And I think these pilot programs and giving the department direction to go to the commission and do a pilot project to try to find equity, I think is fair and reasonable. There's about 30,000, give or take, archers in the state and a whole lot more, 180-some thousand, I think, rifle hunters in the state and all the different hunts. 92% of the funds come from the rifle side, 8% from the archer side. So they are a big contributor. The idea, and everybody continues to play this, that it's one against the other, and it shouldn't be that. If everybody's genuine and so-called sportsmanlike, you would be looking at fairness and equity. You'd want to see that your vets have the equal opportunity to a 30-year archer. Some of those people can't get out. The same with your seniors. They don't have that opportunity to get out there like young people do. So I think we need to get the amendment, get with legislative council, bring this forward, and make sure that the state follows what the statute already says. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel, I need, do you want to talk about this bill as well, or just 2742?
Well, this bill I have to read for the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. Actually, this bill was initiated by a constituent of mine, and I wanted to read into the record his thoughts on this. So,
this is 2743?
That's correct.
Okay.
This individual came from my area, and for the record also, wanted to let everyone here know that I used to hunt a lot with a bow. And I found it challenging. I found that in the 70s, the technology was substantially different. I found that the seasons were a lot longer. The opportunities were a lot more. And that is a fact. Even though you're going to hear testimony about how difficult it is and how extremely astute one has to be a bow hunter, you know, folks, you have just as much an opportunity, if not more so, with the bow as you do with the rifle. I've been there. I've done that. This testimony is not my thought process. It is by John L. Anhorn, who lives in Medford, Oregon. And he writes, bow tags should have the same draw lottery as on deer and elk tags as rifle. There are a lot of pressure on these game animals during regular hunts and special hunts that start in August and go through the end of December, including youth hunts. The bow tags, by using a draw system, could be spread over a larger area. By allowing only so many bow hunters in each area, it would decrease the pressure on deer and elk in the more popular areas. This is especially true for the bow hunt elk season, as it starts in August and goes through September. As you know, bull elk are in their breeding season. They are stupid acting and careless to observing hunters. If we want to help increase the animal population, we need to provide fewer opportunities in these particular areas. In addition to the above, as a rifle hunter, my hunting partners and I have observed small remains of small calf elk laying where animals have been harvested. I feel that only mature deer and elk should be harvested. It is okay to take a mature cow elk, but not a calf elk or a fawn deer. These animals need to have a chance to mature before being hunted. Thank you, John L. Anhorn. We have a real, in my opinion, we have a real problem with our game commission. I've lived here all my life. I've seen the decline of the mule deer herds in eastern Oregon. I'm seeing the decline of Rocky Mountain elk herds in eastern Oregon. I'm seeing the decline of black-tailed deer in eastern Oregon. I see decline of pheasants, population of wild bandtail, and, as we all know, salmon. The only thing you hear is excuses on why. It's beyond our capabilities to manage this. I guess my real concern here is, are we managing for money or are we managing for game? If we're managing for game, then we need to have some equity. We need to make sure that we do not allow large numbers of people in areas, no matter what they're using, whether it be a bow, a rifle, or I don't care, a blowgun. Doesn't matter. If we're going to manage, let's manage for the game. Let's not manage for money. And I really feel, I have a real feeling that we do manage, have a tendency to manage for money in this state. Example, it come to my attention that two-thirds of the capabilities of the hatchery, the Coal River hatcheries in southern Oregon, were being utilized. Two-thirds of it. It's the largest in the state of Oregon. Then, when they get the salmon back up, they take them back down and drop them off down below so people can fish for them, which is great. So my question was very simplistic. Why don't we just go ahead and milk those fish, fertilize those eggs, and when they become fingerlings, just let them go and go on their own? But we can't do that. Why? Well, the survival rate's bad. Well, so what? That's more than you have with your quota. Anyway, if you have a million fish and you only get 5% back, that's a lot better than some of our runs, period. But you can't get an answer. I'm very displeased with our Oregon State Game Commission, our ODF&W. I've seen declining, like I said, herds. I've seen declining fish populations. I've seen declining this, migratory birds. And yet, we seem to have a biologist on every corner. Before, we didn't have a biologist on every corner. We had a lot of game. We had more hunters as well. We have declining hunters in the state. So what's wrong with this picture, folks? And you're going to hear every excuse in the world. But you know, the bottom line is this. Our herds are declining. Our migratory bird population is declining. And our fish population is declining. That's the bottom line. This is one little small tool to bring into play so maybe we can manage a little better. Instead of managing for money, we can manage for the herds. Thank you.
Representative Schaffler, then Representative Roblin.
Well, Wayne, I think you're on the, excuse me, Representative Krieger, we've talked about this already. I think you're on the right track here. We definitely want people to have access, encourage kids to get out there, seniors to be out there after they may have quit hunting with bow. And I really don't, this is not, like you said, this isn't against bow and four rifle, oh, and or vice versa. This is just trying to bring, as you said, some equity to what Representative Esquivel is talking about. I'm not saying the department's perfect, but they take our direction, and I think we've failed here in this building, to be quite frank with you. And over the last few decades, the wrong people have been driving this train, hunters and fishers and people that own game land, aren't the ones driving the train. You got a bunch of people that have never hunted or fished and never will, living in concrete jungles, coming down out of their ivory towers, driving this train. That's the problem. Every single pinniped east of that bridge should be taken out, and we should just allow the fishers to take care of it for us, or anyone else who wants to harvest them. Anything east of that bridge, and hunters and fishers should be making policy, not some ivory tower, Ivy League East Coaster from the Pew Foundation. So back to the bill. I support the bill, and we'll see where it goes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for indulging me.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krieger, I guess the question I have is what your definition of equity is. Because as I read the numbers you gave, there were 215 rifle hunters who took 101 elk in this area, and 234 bow people who took 87. So that, to me, that's a pretty equitable numbers that were in those hunts. I mean, about the same number of both people, about the same number of elk taken. So if that's not equitable, what is equitable?
It's not equitable based, Representative Roman, Mr. Chair. You're looking at take. We're talking about opportunity to get the tag. And you've got a large number of archers that get that tag every year, where the rifle guy, that's how many got tags that were in there, and they took this much. I don't know how many guys put into that and didn't get, weren't successful in the draw, and you're going to see more and more leave the rifle side and go to the other because they can't get a tag, and as that goes up, that harvest rate's going to go up, and there's no checks for it.
Follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
So when you were reading the statute, it seemed to me that the responsibility of the Fish and Wildlife was to manage the elk herds and to select a number that was going to be harvested from any particular region as their base number. So around equitable, wouldn't it be around that take as opposed to around access?
Well, if you could look at it that way, but I look at it, goes back to what I've said here, what I just answered before, is the ability to put in and get a tag
I mean, in other words, you're not talking just, like I said, not about that.
Right.
Take a look at how many days he gets to recreate. 130 days to my nine. Is that equitable about going out and being out in nature, enjoying yourself? No, it's not equitable. Whether you're successful or not, not only depends on getting a tag, but how skilled you are at hunting and being out there to take, and whatever the weather conditions are, all those variables that are out there change. There's guys that have hunted with a bow 4 or 5 years and never killed an elk, and the same with rifle hunters. It's always going to be a certain group, like they say, 10% of the fishermen catch 90% of the fish. It's probably not too much different if you get to looking at those who are successful with a bow or a rifle.
Our chair acknowledged that fact earlier in our testimony.
Yes.
So, I just think that if you don't, in your amendments, because I think pilot programs are good, don't identify what the equitable parts you're talking about are, it's going to be difficult, because I could make a clear case that what they've done to this point is equitable when it comes to the take, which is what they're really supposed to be managing for. So it's a conversation I think you best have before you put it, because they could come back with exactly the same deal and saying we're doing exactly what we should be doing.
Okay.
Representative Schopler?
And I share your concerns, Representative, but I think that what the good representative spelled out here is that would be closely monitored, and that would not, that there wouldn't, this would, any change in this would not result in a negative impact on the resource, and it would be carefully policed and monitored.
But that's
the way I'm understanding the bill.
And I understand that, but if I understand these numbers correctly, and I was going to go for equitable opportunity to be out in the field, then what would happen is you would get a skew of approximately 4 to 1, 170, 150, about 150 elk would have been taken by the 215, and since this would have been down to a much smaller number, you would have had about 30 being taken by the bow hunters. So, I mean, if you give amount of time as opposed to what the take is, then you end up with everybody getting the same amount of time out there, but the chances of actually having success being lower for one group than the other.
Mr. Chair,
other than over a 4-year period.
That's true, but also go back, Mr. Roblin, to the fact that that archer gets one every year. So you talk about those numbers getting up higher on the one side, it would go down. But that downside, you said at 30, you'd have to take 3.5 to 4 times that, because they're getting a tag every year, and they're going to compound those kills over time, where the rifle hunter gets that one tag.
Yeah, and I am a proponent of pilot programs to make things work, but I just, it's important, I think, that we get a clear understanding about where we're talking about equity.
Mr. Chair, we also are leaving it to the department to design this. I'm not designing it.
Mr. Chair, just for Representative Roland, example, I receive an elk tag every 5 years, because I choose to hunt rifle. That isn't necessarily true with bow. Could be every year.
Yeah.
The other thing is, which is very interesting, which I think is the one, there's some very good success stories by the ODF&W. One is our turkeys in the state of Oregon have flourished. The other thing I think they've managed extremely well, in fact, superbly well, is our antelope. We have some of the record heads in the United States in this state of Oregon. The unfortunate thing is by the time I get an antelope tag again, I'll have to go beat it with a cane because I'll be so old. It takes about 16 years to get one, and that was what it took me the last time to receive a tag, 16 years. So. But they've done a great job. And that's what I'm saying is here is that you don't go by quantity, you go by quality. Would I be willing to even see them shut down certain areas to where they didn't harvest any bucks in eastern Oregon in order to get the mule deer population up and running? Yes. Where I had an opportunity to harvest a large mule deer? Yes. And don't fool yourself. No one goes out and needs to hunt. Let's call a spade a spade. We do it because we like to. We do it because we enjoy it. It's not because you need to have to go run out there to take a harvest of deer or an elk to get the meat, because trust me, folks, it doesn't pan out per pound. So,
Mr. Chair, I got one little thing.
The only thing I would say is if we don't hunt, there's a four-legged cat that will be hunting.
Well, and that's another story.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got a bunch of folks here to testify.
You took my deal. I was going to talk to my cat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, one comment because it had to do with Representative Escoval's testimony, something that Mr. Schaffer, Representative Schaffer said. The state of Oregon, I believe, in the last budget cycle spent 1.7% of our entire general fund on all of our natural resource agencies. That's atrocious. It ought to be double that. And now it's even going to be less with the cuts and the sweeps and all that for the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Forestry, Ag. That is what makes rural Oregon. We need to have the people out there not only to take care of as far as enforcement, we need to have the people out there to do the research and to monitor the take and make sure we're sustaining those resources for Oregon and we're not investing in it.
Thank you, representatives, for and thanks. Thank you, Representative Hall, for joining us. Do you want to open quickly and talk about the other
yes,
one?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind.
Let me just open a public hearing on House Bill 2742. Take the representative's testimony on that. And then I'm going to close it. We've got three people here on that, so we'll come back to that later. We've got a lot more folks on 2743.
This is actually, thank you, for the record, Representative Sal Escobel, District 6. Mr. Chair, colleagues, this is about road closures in eastern and western Oregon. There is a error in the drafting that we need to correct, and that is because it encompasses private property, and I don't think that's appropriate. We need to amend that. It just came to my attention yesterday, but I will get a draft amendment on that. And what this needs to be done is a coordination between the Forest Service and the Game Commission, that we need to start road closures equally on both sides of the mountain on a certain day. Example, we have closures in eastern Oregon in the latter part of the season instead of the early part of the season, so the bow hunters are able to use 42. Roads. Whereas rifle hunters aren't. Whereas on the other side of the mountain, we have road closures early, and they open up later, so you have an inequality there. The bow hunters aren't allowed to use the roads, and the rifle hunters are. So I think this is something that what I'm trying to direct is our Game Commission to get with the Forest Service, work out an equitable time frame on road closures when it comes to harvesting of animals, because I don't think that we need to have the bow hunters having access when the rifle hunters don't, and the rifle hunters having access when the bow hunters aren't unable to. I don't know if any of you have ever harvested an elk, but trust me, if you're about 3 miles from the nearest road, it's not much fun once it goes down.
Put it over here.
Yeah, there you go. It's on your back and you walk out. So that's what this is all about. There needs to be an amendment for the private property, because we do not want to incur any ramifications on private property and private property rights. So any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffer.
I have never harvested an elk, but I loved beef for a year, my second year in college, so kind of the same thing.
No, a lot bigger.
Yeah, a lot bigger. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. I'm just going to leave 2742 open in case folks here on 2743 want to comment, so we don't have to come back to it. We have amendments, it sounds like, on 2742, so there'd be another opportunity if we don't get to it. But if someone's here and they want to comment on that, they certainly are welcome to. We have a policy in this committee and in the legislature of allowing those who've come a long way to testify first. And so I've got about six of those. So I'm going to call them up first. That's Mike Slinkard, Richard DeChambeau, and James Moore. Come on up.
And then after that, we'll have Bob Weber, Wayne Endicott, and Kenneth Wilson. So Mike, Rick, Richard, and James are who I'm looking for now. And Mike, are you Mike?
Yes.
You're first.
Okay.
Welcome.
Well, this is my first time in front of a committee like this, so I hope my protocol's all right.
We're not the most professional bunch sometimes at all.
Well, we do. I certainly do appreciate it.
Could you say your name for the record?
Yeah, my name is Mike Slinkard. I live in John Day. I actually own Winner's Choice Bowstrings in John Day, Oregon. So, basically, I wanted to comment on this, and there's going to be a lot of other people, I'm sure, that's going to tell you more about the biological side of this than I am. But I will address a few issues that I felt that, from Representative Krieger's comments that I would like to touch on. Number one, when you talk about equitable, it is, and I think everybody needs to know this and realize this, it is a fact that a rifle hunter can go buy a bow tag after the draw, after he finds out the results of the draw. And that's very prevalent. And a lot of people, they put in for the rifle tag. If they don't draw it, they bow hunt. Also, I want to make it a point that all rifle hunters also have the ability to use scent lock. They use range finders. Their equipment is much better than it was 20 or 30 years ago as well. So really, it's equitable. They can use those same pieces of equipment. Also, in my part of the country, elk are not stupid. They're not easy to draw in. As a matter of fact, a significant number of elk in Grant County are killed in the first rifle season by guys calling them in. They're much, actually, I've had reports from rifle hunting people that I know that find that elk are much easier to call in rifle season because there's less pressure. Okay, less people trying to call them in, so they actually come better. The second rut of the elk, if they're not bred in the original rut, cows will come back into estrus during the rifle season, and the bulls are quite aware of that. So cow elk calls are very very effective for that. Also, some of the advancements in bow hunting that were mentioned, in my mind, are actually helping us out as far as this equitable issue. My daughter, 12 years old, was able to bow hunt and actually harvested her first deer at 12 years old. My dad's 67 years old. He bow hunts every year. Not successful every year, but last year he was successful enough. He took an elk and a deer both. So saying that youth and elderly people can't bow hunt, the very things that he talked about, the compound bow being something that's much more user-friendly, actually helps to level that playing field. And remember, anybody can buy a bow tag every year. It's not just because you're a rifle hunter does not mean you can't go buy a bow tag if you don't draw. Really, the biggest thing that I'm here for, I'm not going to harp on all those issues. I think a lot of other people are going to do it at least as well or better than I can. But, being from Eastern Oregon, I think everybody knows we're in a pretty economically depressed area. And in Grant County, the influx of bow hunters every year, not only from the eastern or the western part of the state, but also from other states, is a significant part of the income in Grant County. There's a little store in a little place called Seneca, Oregon, that I know the guy quite well, and he claims about 65% of his yearly revenue comes during the bow season. So, Grant County hit 19% unemployment here a few months back, and a significant amount of dollars come from the bow season. You don't get that from rifle. Remember, there's a 5% limit on non-residents. No more than 5% of the non-residents can actually draw a hunt that is a draw hunt. And so that, in very essence, will eliminate a lot of your non-residents, and they're a big income producer for our part of the state. I own a bowstring factory, and believe it or not, I'm the fifth largest employer in Grant County with 40 people. Think about that one for a second. And, you know, anything that and we're 100% archery company, anything that limits bow hunting is going to obviously have an effect on my company as well. And, you know, we do market worldwide. However, Oregon is a very, very a big part of our income yearly. And anything that's going to curtail bow hunting is going to have a financial impact, and it could conceivably cost jobs to my company. So, like I said, there's a lot of people that are going to tell you, you know, that bow hunting is more difficult, and it is. But the economic standpoint of this, I think, is significant as well. Eastern Oregon is you know, I've never seen it like this from an economic standpoint. You know, mills are closed and people are out of work. And we need these dollars that come in. And bow hunting right now is the only open, you know, the fact that anybody can come bow hunting, it does create its own problems. And I think that the ODF&W needs to be, that, you know, I'm not going to tell you that there's not problems with the way things are handled over there, but I can tell you that this bill would work in reverse. It would be counterproductive for running in Eastern Oregon on all facets. Thank you.
Richard.
My name is Richard DeChambeau. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. First of all, my understanding with the amendments that are proposed, HB 2743 would become a prototype or a model for the South Oregon coast, so it wouldn't really be affecting the east side hunting population. And one of the things when we talked about, and we're talking about opportunity and equity together, is the fact that many times rifle hunters or others have approached the commission and asked for some adjustment or to look into this problem, and then we're reminded by the commission at many, many times, and I have been personally, that they aren't selling dead animals tags. They're selling opportunity. Well, you're talking about bow hunters have an opportunity of 45 plus days starting in August, running through the end of September, and then get to come back in some instances. They can hunt across the state. They're not limited to residents. They're not limited to non-residents. So if we take the area that we were talking about that House Member Roblin alluded to down there, and we had the 215 rifle hunters, and then the 200 whatever close to it archery hunters, and had almost identical take, 110 to 80, whatever you want to call it, it's fine. What happens when that herd comes out of bull to cow ratio and they want to adjust the take? The only folks they ever adjust are rifle hunters. And the archers then go down to California and recruit their friends and come up, and the next year you got 450 archers that take 160 animals. Who gets cut? The rifle hunters. They don't manage the archers at all. It's unlimited. Come into our state and hunt. Great. Great for the economy. But what about the folks that put out some other money, and we'll talk about it, some serious dollars to the ODF&W? $14,335,000 from the Pittman Robertson Fund. That funds an excise tax put on the place of manufacture or importation on the guns, ammunition, and sporting goods. Of that, archers contribute less than 10%. 90% of that is from firearms. That's $14,335 to Oregon. And I think they deserve at least an opportunity to have a model piece of legislation and a prototype that would force the commission to take a look at how we make it equitable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you, Richard. James.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, my name is James Moore, M-O-O-R-E. I am a lifelong Oregonian, born and raised in the state except for a few years that I was going in the military. I am a disabled veteran hunter, and I also, years ago, used to hunt with a bow, but because of some injuries and one thing or another to a shoulder, I can't pull a bow anymore, which breaks my heart. But I think the main thing that we talk about in equity or inequitably, you talk about the amount of opportunity. To a man of my age, 63 years of age, and disabled, I can't walk, and we've got some, you know, some other serious kind of problems, that I haven't drawn for the last 4 years. However, I made a mistake, and I was drawing for the wrong thing, so preference points won't do. In our area, to be able to go down and hunt where it is advisable to hunt, I will only be able to hunt there about once every fifth year. Well, you had 5 years on to me now. I'm like the gentleman that wants to beat him with a cane. You know, if you can get to the fourth. So I think in doing this, that if you bring this back down to a more numerically equitable system amongst the hunters and the opportunity for the hunters to draw equally across the board, that quite possibly this could change some of the effects of people like myself that do not have the ability to go out and really beat the forest like we used to. I know that the state of Oregon, because of my disability, gives me a nice hunting license and fishing license every year, and for that I'm very appreciative. However, it's worthless without some opportunity to go hunting, the hunting licenses, you know. I grew up in Klamath County, Oregon for 50-plus years of my life, and we hunting was a ritual there every year. I mean, fathers and sons, and as my children were growing up, I had two of the best hunters in the world, and they were both my daughters. I mean, they were the eyes and ears of the forest, you know, and I appreciated that opportunity. With a lot of things that are going on now, and I know a lot of people will talk about the Mentors Program, and that to me is an excellent program, to be able to take, for a father to take his son out, for a father to take some other person's son out that maybe can't do it or has, you know, is not a hunter, but the child wants to. I mean, I like the Mentor Program. But I would like, speaking for the veterans of America, I would like to see more opportunity given on a more equitable basis, not again being against the bow hunter, but more equality of opportunity. And for this and for listening to me, I thank you very much.
Thank you, James. Questions for you, Representative Shoffler.
Once again, it's really not a question, but I don't see this as against the bow hunters, and it is going to be a pilot program. And I just want you to know, I want everyone on this committee wants your business to thrive. And I don't speak for this committee, but I believe everyone on this committee would allow for hunting of cougars out there with dogs again, rather than paying our state people to do it. And secondly, I don't speak for this committee, but I believe everyone on this committee would support pulling more water out of that river and pouring it all over Grant County to make things grow. So when you go home, I want you to know those things, because it's important that you know that. But I do appreciate you coming down here, and I do wish you all the success in the world. And if this does pass, we'll be watching it very carefully. I don't want your business to suffer for it. So just wanted to share that with you before you go home.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Richard, Mike brought up the point that if you don't draw in those South Coast units, or I guess any unit, the archer can put in for that and get a point, a preference point. I want you to explain how that works as far as how that works against the rifle hunter, where he ends up having a double opportunity and competing for the tag of the rifle hunter.
Right. What happens is, as a rifle hunter, you have to put in for the draw every year, accumulate points, which points are probably a misnomer. What we should talk is accumulate years. 4 points is 4 years. 4 years without hunting, let's say on an average. And then you draw. When you draw, if you're successful, you lose all your points and start over. An archer can go and hunt the same area every year and put in for the points, and then take every fourth year and hunt rifle and keep right on hunting with archery equipment. Yes, a rifle hunter can go over and hunt archery if they want to, but why should we be forced to do that? I'm saying make it equitable. They can draw, get a tag every year and successfully use that tag and still get preference points every year while we're stuck waiting 4 years. And getting back to James L's point for a second, if I could, on the mentoring program, we saw that go, as Wayne said, from 1,500 to 3,500 to projected at 6,000. That program has been highly successful. Vast majority, 75, 80% of those are rifle hunters. Well, if we as adults can't get a tag, we can't very well mentor children. And we're saying, can we take a pilot program project, sit down with ODFW, and let's try something and see if we're right? Why do we have to do the same thing over and over again and get and expect a different result and more equity? I mean, it doesn't work that way.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Bob Weber, Wayne Endicott, and Kenneth Wilson.
His father was legislative counsel for California for 40 years. And his dad recalled the California Supreme Court.
Bob, please.
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, I'm Robert Weber. I live at 94819 Elk River Road out of Port Orford. I live in the Sixes unit. I'm one of Representative Krieger's senior veterans. But I am also a bow hunter. And I'm in the Oregon Hunters Association, and I'm here to express to the committee the position of the Oregon Hunters Association, which is we oppose this bill. I keep hearing it repeated that this isn't a bow hunter versus rifle hunter issue, but then it always comes right back to that. They're talking equities, and they're saying it's inequitable as between rifle hunters and bow hunters, and that is creating a conflict. Additionally, I did a little research on the Sixes unit, and what I found looking at the ODFW website, looking at their hunting statistics, in 2006, there were 195 rifle hunters for bull elk. They harvested 110 elk. The first season, they had a 66% success rate. The second season, they had a 50% success rate. Archery hunters, there were 213. They took 33 elk. That's a 15% success rate. So when you're talking about equities, the rifle hunters were in the vicinity of four times more successful than the archery hunters. And that seems pretty equitable. If you're talking about they can go every fourth year. But the reality is, and there were some comments about, well, gee, the archery hunters get to be out in the field a lot longer. Anybody can go out in the field anytime they want. Go scouting, go camping, go whatever. It's just, that's not a real issue, I don't think. I think that this is really boiling down to a situation where there's a perception of inequities. And I think that up to this point, there's been a pretty decent job by the department and the commission to have equity. I'm an old rifle hunter. I switched to bow hunting because I wanted to go where I wanted to go every year. I didn't want to have to wait 2, 3, 4 years. So I switched to bow hunting. I rifle hunt every year also. So it isn't like I'm stuck, and as indicated, anybody can apply, and if they don't get a rifle tag, they could go bow hunting if they choose. They could go rifle hunting in areas of where there's a general season. So it isn't like they just flat don't get an opportunity to go. They choose apparently not to go, and I don't think that should drive the legislature to get into the management of the wildlife. I think that should, for the most part, be left to ODFW, and I don't think it currently there's any significant inequities in what's going on. I was a participant in the bow hunter or the archer review commission or committee, which the department had 3-4 years ago. We went through all of these issues, and there were some changes made in terms, I think, in the Ochoco, there's draw for bow hunting, things like that. But after you heard all of the information, there really isn't any great discrepancies as between archery and bow hunters. And from the Oregon Hunters Association position, we don't want to create any dissension and make it a bow hunter, rifle hunter situation. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Wayne.
Hi. Ken wanted to go next.
Yeah, yeah, please. That's fine.
I'm Kenneth Wilson. I'm an outfitter guide, and I live in Mr. Kruger's district also. I'd like to thank him for everything he has done for our hunting opportunities in Southern Oregon and all the other agendas. But I am very much against this bill. I'm a bow hunter, and I'm a rifle hunter. I listened to several people here say something about the difference in how much money is going from bow hunting, from rifle hunting, receiving money. I pay the same amount for my elk tag as a bow hunter or as a rifle hunter. I wasted 8 years to draw the Powers unit, which was my choice, to rifle hunt. I haven't killed a bull with my bow for 5 or 6 years. But I love being out there. We do need the time to try to harvest an animal. We're not successful. Now, I'm going to go back onto my guide business. 2 years ago, we guided 13 rifle hunters kill 13 elk. We guided 7 bow hunters kill 2 elk. We are very professional what we do, so trying to make things equal, like the bow hunter can just step out there and get it done, is not true. Now, Mr. Krieger's got some very valid points on the department. There should be some concessions maybe given on the bow hunting end of it, but that needs to be worked out by the professional people that are in charge of it, not by us. And I strongly oppose this bill, and I would like to answer any questions if you have any.
Thanks, Wayne. And then we'll do questions for all three of you afterwards. Okay.
My name is Wayne Endicott. I'm vice president of Oregon Bow Hunters. We strongly oppose this bill or any representation of a pilot program for this bill. You know, I sit here today as a young man growing up in Oregon, hunted all my life, loved to hunt, very passionate about it. And I'm kind of heartbroken today in a lot of ways because I really feel strongly that this is extremely driving a wedge of prejudice between, you know, hunters. I mean, number one, I'm a life member of OHA. I'm a hunter, number one. Number two, I'm a bow hunter, and I love to bow hunt. It's a passion of mine. I sell bows and arrows for a living. I have for 19 years. I have Archery Pro Shop, and I absolutely love the business. It's the most wonderful business I could ever dream of being involved in. But, you know, any time that we have something that drives a wedge between sportsmen, you know, prejudice is always ugly. I see this as ugliness between a group that should be cooperating on bigger issues. I mean, I think there isn't a person in this room that doesn't agree that if we had tremendous game populations in this state and we had an abundance of game, that we would not be addressing this issue or pointing fingers. And, you know, I heard a lot about, you know, mentions of fish, you know, poor, and how small, you know, the archery group is. As far as discrimination, I mean, if you were looking at a salmon river like the Elk River, I guided when I was going to college part-time, and, you know, I love that river. And if you were going to make an analogy, I mean, with equipment and technology, I mean, you'd be looking at a salmon fishery like the Elk River, and if you're a rifle hunter, you'd be a gillnetter at the mouth. If you were a muzzleloader hunter, you'd be upriver back bouncing in a drift boat and kind of controlling the holes. If you were a bow hunter, you're standing on the bank with a fly rod and a wet fly and you're trying to catch a salmon. You know, the guy on the gravel bar with the fly rod is the smallest group of all, and he's the most discriminated against. He's not going to get a hole to himself. You know, we have 41 rifle hunts that take place, over 41 rifle hunts take place during archery season, and 35% of the late muzzleloader hunt takes place during archery season for blacktail deer the late season. And we're not complaining about that. I mean, we're very thankful for the opportunity and time we have in this state, and I think we have a wonderful state. As far as prejudice go, Fred Bear, I think, said it best. He said, don't judge a man by what he chooses to use as a weapon, but by what he has in his heart. You know, and I think, you know, that states it best as far as the sportsmen's go, you know. As far as a use model, Ken Meyer, director of Nevada Fish and Game, and I'd like to read a quote from him. As far as archery equipment goes, he said it's a perfect population use model that offers hunters the most amount of time of field with the least amount of impact on the resource. You know, without a doubt, I mean, archery hunting in the state of Oregon is probably the least amount of impact on the resource. Archery equipment is always going to be a stick and a string. It's never, you know, we can advance the equipment, we can change the materials. You know, it's always going to be difficult. You know, and it's always going to be a primitive weapon, no matter what we do with the equipment. And we have good regulations, you know, to provide that stays that way. As far as the department goes, you know, three years ago, we went through an archery review committee. Every sporting, you know, user group was represented there, and as that seven meeting. We were the first ones to be willing to give concessions, and we gave up units. They asked us directly, you know, was it fair that if rifle hunters aren't able to take antlerless animals in certain units, would it be fair for the archers to? And we said, absolutely not. And we gave that up. And, you know, we're the first ones, I think, as far as a conservative group, you know, to agree, look, if we've got problems, we want to sit down. You know, first of all, if it's the South Coast, we want to take the user groups, the head of the user groups, and we want to have a town hall meeting. We want to pull in everybody. We want to pull in the rifle hunters. We want to pull in the bull hunters. And let's start this thing from ground roots, you know, from grassroots. Let's have a town hall meeting on this. And, you know, as far as commission goes, I think we have a wonderful commission. I think Roy Elliker is the finest director probably on the West Coast. You know, Ron Anglin is a wonderful man. I mean, all those people are so willing to work with us as far as the commission and as far as user groups. And I guarantee anybody could call Roy Elliker up today as far as a sportsman in this state or a non-sportsman and have an audience with him. He will return your phone call, and he will give you an audience. That wasn't true 10 years ago. At all. You know, this game commission that we have, and the commission members that the governor's appointed are fine people, and they will all give you their time. And as far as any user group, you know, that approaches them, we had a seven meeting, our archery review committee, I think, consisted of seven meetings. And, you know, there was a lot of time and effort put in, and every user group was represented there. And we came out with conclusions of that, you know, that hopefully will last for the next decade. You know, we're very thankful for the seasons we have. I think we have a wonderful commission. I think the staff of the Oregon State Game Commission are wonderful people. And, you know, and I want to address one fourth point, and that's as far as equipment, there isn't one person in this room that I couldn't fit up and shoot archery from the weakest to the strongest. The advancement in the equipment's made it very user-friendly. I when we had our Hunter's Day here at the Capitol, and I think I addressed most of you here, I gave out a little pamphlet. There's a 9-year-old child in there that did a mentor program last year and shot his first deer, you know. And he's just a little guy that got dedicated to archery. He's very accurate, and I was able to donate a tag to him and took him out, and he was able to harvest his first animal. It's the most wonderful experience of his life. That's how easy archery equipment is. I mean, and you know, Representative Krueger, you're a very respected representative. I probably talked to 50 bow hunters in your area. You've done a wonderful job for the people in your area. You're a fine politician in every single way. I still have an open invitation for you to come to my shop. I'd love to introduce you to archery. It's a wonderful sport. You would be shocked on how accurate you are. And I'm not ignorant to know that, you know, archers, you know, and criminals both, well, you pick up any kind of weapon, and if there is a mistake made by them, and it's very visible because it's an arrow, and I can't remember how many times, you know, we just have recently had several Oregon duck players that were shooting ducks with a BB gun, and our local news station called them hunters. well, they were the furthest thing from a hunter, they were the furthest thing from the sportsman, they were the furthest thing from a conservationist there ever could be. They probably had no idea that that was probably illegal. They probably knew it wasn't a good idea, but they didn't realize that they were going to face a game penalty because of it. But, you know, to say that, you know, because one kind of tackle or another is used and you call that person a bow hunter or you call that person a rifle hunter, a muzzleloader hunter, there's all kinds of weapons used in all kinds of ways. And you know, to say that they're a sportsman or a conservationist is just a terrible misuse of the term. You know, it's furthest thing from it. They're a criminal and they're abusing our system. You know, I don't want to take up any more of your time. Just want to let you know that this bill would end, if in any form of this bill went forward as a pilot program, it would end my 19-year run as an archery shop owner. I would not be able to stay alive in archery. And my shop's been in existence, I believe, since 1969. I purchased it in 1989, and I've operated since. I would not be able to fiscally stay open. I would have to close my doors if this bill or any form of this bill went through. It would end archery as we know it in the state of Oregon. And thank you for your time.
Questions, Mr. Pennell? Representative Krieger.
Wayne, you just made a statement and end your archery, end your business. Recently, they made some changes on the east side that you do have to draw over there. Did that end your business?
You know, we adamantly opposed, you know, the Ochocos is going into a pilot program. It had been in a pilot program before, you know, in the 90s. You know, there's a tremendous amount of tags issued, you know, for that particular unit. Winnehaw, Sled Springs, Mount Emily, Chesnemis, those are all in special draw units. I have 13 points. I'm hoping to draw Winnehaw this year. I'm praying for it. But those are all special draw, highly sought after units for archery. You know, the more restriction of opportunity in the state, of course, is going to, you know, limit the amount of bull hunters that are out there. If we split the state up into draws and we went identical, as your bill said, to what the draw hunts, yes, it would. I mean, we would have a lot of people going back over to the rifle side, you know. In our archery view, there was a pamphlet sent out that was a hunter survey. And Ron can confirm this, but I think it was above 70 or 80% of the people surveyed chose, I mean, it might even be higher than that, if they had a choice between bow or rifle, they chose rifle. And, you know, if we strictly, you know, if we restrict archery, the people that have switched over to archery would definitely go back to rifle. It would make your tags harder to draw. You know, the archery, like I said, you know, and quoted Ken Meyer, it's a perfect model. It's a perfect use model, not to affect, you know, have any measurable effect on the resource, but allow a tremendous amount of opportunity for the people to actually experience the woods and have an opportunity for harvest at the same time. A very limited opportunity on harvest.
Follow-up.
Just follow-up. Wayne, what I'm concerned about, if we don't address it, that this wedge, in fact, will grow over time.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to Al Elkins, and they don't like it because they have both archers and they have both rifle hunters. They don't want to see a division.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to see that either.
Right.
But in any fair-minded person that looks at some guy that's going to draw one tag or two tags over a 6 or 7 year period or 8 year period and someone else that gets one every year, because like you said, you love it out there. That has been my heritage, too, and I worked around people for 28 years when I call my prior occupations.
Right.
They lived out there. That was their life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're taking that life away from a certain segment because they don't want to hunt with a bow or aren't physically able to. So I think maybe we need to get together and talk about that sometime, come in. The other point was you said I was a fine politician.
And Representative Krueger, I apologize if I'm
not. No.
No.
I'm
in the time I've been
in the chair. Let me explain.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
There are people in this building who are fine politicians.
I meant that.
I
would be a
am
compliment.
A fine legislator.
Okay. I apologize for that.
I would say he's a fine American.
Fine American.
That's his line. You know, I love this committee. I really do, because people are very respectful and passionate and get right down to it without, I think, getting ugly and pointing fingers. Now, that, as long as you take the sports commercial fishing part out of it. But, because that can get ugly. But I, to you, sir, I don't think we should just let the departments run themselves. I just disagree with that. That is why we're here. We are the board of directors for the departments. I think we need to let experts and things bring us information and we make decisions. But and this department, I think, is run well. I agree with that. Yeah. And they are doing a good job. But I guess I don't see this as really... I see this as more access, not denying. I really, I just don't see it that way, unless I'm reading the math wrong. I think it gives people more opportunity to go out and hunt rather than taking away opportunity to bow, but with a boat rifle rather than a bow. Do you sell guns and ammo, or you do?
I do not. I'm strictly an archery pro shop.
That was my question. Thank you.
So I think some of the questions raised are going to be answers that come up on how would it affect draw numbers if the bill were to pass. So you have a sense of would it actually have an effect on anything or not in terms of if you had less if you had a controlled hunt in archery, would it free up more tags somewhere else to go into the pool or not? And so I think the department can cover that. But we've got one more person I think is probably from more than 100 miles and just didn't catch it, but I want to see if they wanted to testify. That's John McCallum. Another 100-miler? Yeah, we've got a list here, and if you haven't signed up, we'll put it back out so you can add on. I'm trying to get anyone from... Okay. So, John, and then Ron Russell, I don't have you, but it sounds like you're from a ways away, too.
9 miles from where I live.
Yeah. Oh, all right. So let's get, what was it, Ron Russell? Ron Russell, could you come up as well, please? And then and we're going to go with Rich Thompson so I can keep Dave and Joe together. Right. So Ron Russell, we should have Ron Russell, John, which?
McCollum.
McCollum, and then Rich Thompson. Great, thank you. And actually, I guess I've got Ron first.
Thank you, committee, for having me. And my name is Ron Russell. I grew up in the 6th Tioga Chetco unit in that area my whole life. I've been a taxidermist for 28 years. I'm kind of in the middle between hunters, OSP, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, guides, bow hunters, muzzleloaders. I'm kind of caught in the middle, and I see it all. I see how it all works, push, shove, give, take, preference points, everything. I have kind of a diverse idea about everything. What I mean by that is I see every avenue guys make to get tags or not to get tags in the state of Oregon and the differences. And Mr. Krieger has talked to me, Representative Krieger, about the differences between equity of time, his time to take for a tag in the 6th unit in our area. And like he's saying, it takes him 3 years to draw or 4 years to draw a tag, and the bow hunters get the tag every year. And Mr. Roblin, when you were speaking, Representative Roblin, you were speaking about the equality of how many animals were taken. That's a real respectable question, but what we have in the 6th unit is we have a diamond in the rough in the state of Oregon. We have a Roosevelt elk species that have more Roosevelt elk coming out of that unit than any other unit that's going into the record book of the world for bow record book and rifle record book. It's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on a trophy class bull elk. So what we have is we have people coming from all over the United States of America that want to finish the grand slam for elk, and that's the Roosevelt elk, and they want to put it in the record book. So what they're doing is they're finding the 6s is an open unit for bow, and it's allowing them to come into that unit and in the south coast of Oregon because we have some very efficient guides, we have some very good private property landowners, but that is what's occurring here, is that this little unit is getting more and more and more pressure, and the rifle hunters are going to have to be cut down out of that unit. We know it's coming. The rifle hunters do. I hunt with a bow and a rifle and a muzzleloader. So what I'm saying is you look at Wenaha unit in the eastern part of the state, there's 20 rifle tags and there's 20 bow tags. There's approximately 3,000 people put in for that 20 tags for a bow and 3,000 that put in for that tag for rifle. Their success rate's about 96% because it's a sought-after trophy unit. and there's a couple more in the state, and the Ochocos are like that. So what I'm saying in our area, what Wayne's trying to do is protect that species and time that's still there, and there's a balance. So to answer your question, that's what's happening in that unit. There's over a period of time, there's more and more and more bow hunters coming into it because it's open. And the rifle hunters, out of that 101 animals that were taken last year, there's approximately 75 tags that are land owner preference tags in that unit that aren't open to the rifle either. And that shows up in that number, but if you don't know that, that is in that 101 elk taken. And I don't know if I lost you there. There's a certain amount of tags that the public gets, which is 87 each season. Then they add another 60 or 75 or whatever they can for LOP tags, that's land owner preference, and that's in that 101 for the rifle quota, not in the bow. But they can hunt with a bow with the LOP tag too, so don't let me mistake that. They can choose their weapon. And so that is one of the issues there in our units on the South Coast that's happening as far as pressure. And I don't think Wayne wants to stop it for the whole state. Another issue, too, is the way it's written in the law that he said, and I've been to several committee meetings and commission meetings in the state, and I spoke. They're not selling an animal, is what I've been told by the Oregon Game Commission. They're selling a hunting opportunity. You pay the same price for the elk tag if you hunt 5 days or you hunt 30 days. You're paying for an opportunity. That's what they say. They're not paying for a trophy animal. But I said, then what about the Winnaha? What about the Anuinchav Close? They're managed for trophy class animals. So that's the discrepancy in the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Then the other occurrence that's happened is that we have a preference program that's been issued in the early 80s. And the maximum amount of preference points you can have this year is 16 years of points. I have that for one species of animals in the state, which is an antelope, and it doesn't matter. But the maximum you can have is 16 points. There's only 20 people in the United States that have 16 points for antelope, and I'm one of them. So I've chose to wait 16 years for one particular unit. Well, what the preference point system has done in certain units in the state of Oregon is it's caused rifle hunters that used to get that tag every second year or third year or fourth year or 5 year, it was okay. They could handle that. But now certain places in the state, it's taken 10 to 15 years to accumulate that tag to hunt in that unit. So over this last, I'm going to say 13, let's go 11 years, because there's 16 years of preference points, it's created a tremendous amount of people that have flopped over from rifle to bow hunting, and it's generated a huge, huge business here in the state for the bow industry. It's magnified tremendously, because I've had successful hunters for 15 years of hunting with a rifle that have flipped over the last 2 years because they're tired of waiting, and they see the better success. And in the sixes unit during bow season, in 2007, I had 11 bulls come into my shop, and there's a trophy class in elk. They measure the size of the horns. That's what the hunters go for, is a trophy. And in that average, the average bull that came into my shop was 287 points. And that's right under Boone and Crockett with a rifle, but all those bulls make it. And they average from 310 points down to 250. I had six bulls come in that year and in rifle season, and the average bull, the big one, was 262 points. Now, I'm not saying that. Mr. Krieger's killed one of the biggest bulls in the state of Oregon in that unit with the rifle. He's very lucky. But in the average, the bow hunters killed the bigger bulls during that season. And that's okay, because the big bulls rut, they're with the cows. But if you want to see something change, you put 20 rifle tags in the sixes unit during the rut. And you see how many rifle hunters put in for that tag. And Wayne doesn't want that to happen. What we're talking about is equality. You'll have 3,000 to 5,000 people putting in for that 20 tags. If it was during the same time the bow hunters get. Because it's in the rut, they're more vulnerable, you see the bigger bulls, and the opportunity to harvest a world-class animal is there.
Wouldn't you have let, and my dad was talking about this last night about hunting in the rut, but wouldn't you then have to take out a bunch from the rifle?
That is correct. Yeah. Yep, that's your management. That is correct.
Long argument about it last night.
And that's what we're coming to. And another thing is, as a bow hunter, and I'll finish here, is you talk about hunting time and opportunity. I can get up Friday night, and I can drive to Silver Lake, Oregon during September. And I can bugle, let's say I'm there at daylight, 6:10 in the morning. I can bugle for 3 hours, try to locate. Use a call to locate your elk sometimes. Then if I don't find anything there, it's 9:30. I said, I don't see a bull. I seen a couple spikes, a couple cows. Well, this isn't working. So I get in my rig, and I can drive from Silver Lake to Tokatee, Oregon, which is up by Diamond Lake, Crater Lake area. I can get out of there probably, I can get there by 11 o'clock, 2 hours. And that's taking your time. So 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock that day, I can bugle and locate there and see if I find an elk. Then I can drive on down to Steamboat Rock Creek just above Roseburg because I didn't locate there. Then I get there, say, 3 o'clock. So I can bugle there for 2-3 hours, see if I can locate anything. Nothing's working. So 5:36, I get my rig. I drive to Camas Valley, Oregon. I bugle there, not too much. I drive up Bone Mountain to Powers, or I can drive up Burnt Mountain and say at 7 o'clock, I locate a bull. So my chances are I can hunt four different places because my daylight hours are 14 to 16 hours during September. And when I rifle hunt during the winter, it's light at 7:30 and it's dark at 4:10 to 4:30, sometimes 5 o'clock. Your time is this. So you're waiting 5 years to hunt five times 7 hours. 35 hours of total hunting in 5 years or 3 years or 2 years or 1 year. But you can choose the second hunt, which is 9 days times that daylight time. So that's kind of in the mix, too. Of what time it is. Rain and it's sloppy out there. And yeah, it's your choice to camp. You want it to rain sometimes for better hunting conditions, but that's just part of the equity and to look at it as a whole. And what Wayne said here in respect to Mr. Endicott, he gave the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife basically a pretty good round of applause here and a thumbs up. And I beg the Oregon Hunters Association, the Oregon Bow Hunters Association, and the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Synopsis to put a scale on a 1 to 10 in their synopsis and have the general all-around public vote and give them a mark on 1 to 10, and you see what they get. I would honor that as anything I've ever did in this state for my business and my, to see what the general representative of the public thinks about the Department of Fish and Wildlife on a 1 to 10. I beg them to put that out on a scale to do that.
Need to move on. I do now know why when we tried to get the big monster buck, our taxidermist was like a year and a half out. It's because you guys are running all over the place hunting yourselves.
I wish I could.
Yeah. Speed it up a little bit. I wanted that thing on the wall. It's not your shop, but I see how you guys work. you're not a representative, are you, John?
No.
But you're John Eden of Eden Ridge Outfitters. Please.
All right. My name is John McCollum, and I'm a professional hunting guide and outfitter on the Southern Oregon coast. First of all, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify regarding House Bill 2743. I'd like to begin by sharing with you that I'm an avid bow hunter, most of all, and I do also rifle hunt. Throughout the years as an experienced bow hunter, I have had to deal with many obstacles that have made bow hunting most difficult to me. Most of all, fire danger. I mean, closures, whatnot, Plum Creek, they shut the gates. We have a lot of loss of land, of places, and opportunity to hunt. With season time constraints and closure issues, the bow hunting community cannot afford to lose any more hunting opportunities than we already have. For example, I mean, if we have to choose to either rifle hunt or bow hunt, Wayne thinks 4 points is hard to draw a tag now. I think that's probably going to at least double, if not triple, because you're going to see a lot of people choose to rifle hunt versus archery hunt. For example, if you think a long time to wait, I apply in Arizona. I've got 15 points for sheep, 13 for mule deer, and 12 for elk. I mean, I'm waiting to draw a pretty choice tag because they have great hunting opportunity down there. As both a hunter and a guide, I mean, I strongly, I'm a strong supporter of professional wildlife management, such as management entrusted by our Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Good wildlife management must be supported through facts based on research and science and not personal agendas, as I feel House Bill 2743 represents. Mr. Krieger, I mean, I've respected your actions since you've been in office. I've been a big supporter of you. But, however, I can't support the passage of this bill that you have sponsored. Based on my knowledge of the intent of this bill, it is at this time that I implore and encourage you, the committee, to put a stop to this and let it progress no further. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Rich.
Thank you, Representative Klim. For the record, my name is Rich Thompson. I'm from Newburg, Oregon, and I am the president of the Traditional Archers of Oregon. I'm not too close to the microphone, am I?
All right.
Thank you. Representative Krieger, for the record, I'm old.
But you're looking good.
We're all getting there.
Some of us appreciate
it. I've learned a lot today listening to the testimony and so forth, but my take on it when I came down here this morning was that this bill told me that there was an old disgruntled hunter, rifle hunter, that's trying to equate modern high-powered hunting rifle with a handheld bow. And I'd like to point out, as I do in my hunter safety classes and my bow hunter education classes, that rifle has a range of probably 300 to 400 yards. Divide that by 10, and you see what you have to do with a bow. 30 to 40 yards is the average range. Yes, there are things that die from arrows that came from further away, but on average, and it's probably less than that on average. Other people have pointed out the Archery Review Committee that was convened by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I served on the committee myself, and the committee was started because of complaints by archers for overcrowding. And unless you've tried it and you don't understand that successful archery hunting requires close shots at undisturbed game, not long-range shots at spooked animals running through the forest over a distant ridge. And I've had hunters say they want to come out and hunt with me. And wouldn't it help if I was out there chasing animals all over the woods for you? No, sir, it wouldn't. One thing I wanted to point out was that ODFW has adopted its own version of the three R's that a lot of us learned in school many years ago due to declining numbers of hunters. They say they want to retain, recruit, and remove barriers to hunting. And I had some other questions coming in here. I looked at a couple of my favorite archery areas I enjoy putting in for Chesnemis elk, which for me is a draw as an archer. And I have to go to the tag. I also enjoy putting in and would love to draw the Metolius deer unit for archery. It would be my only deer opportunity, so there are a lot of restrictions on those. And my question would be, would those kind of restrictions be placed on rifle hunters? For example, Chesnemis unit, the archers get about 300 tags on average, and the rifle hunters get 770 tags in that unit. And Metolius deer, 550 tags, and the archers get 20 tags in that unit. And in my opinion, House Bill 2743 will surely result in increased crowding during both the rifle and archery seasons, resulting in poor quality hunting, increased barriers to both rifle and archery hunting, and increased complaints and wasted time by ODFW, as witnessed by the seven or so meetings you heard about for the Archery Review Committee that took time away from managing other things that ODFW is supposed to be managing. And it will result in decreased recreational opportunities for all hunters in Oregon. This bill seems to be, I thought coming in here again, that it was a knee-jerk reaction and was not well thought out, but Representative Krieger, you made a lot of very pertinent points in your presentation, and I see where you're coming from at this point. But I would urge you to cancel this bill and let our competent professionals at ODFW manage the season, the game, hunters, and equipment rules, and maybe allowing you guys to move on to more important things. We just heard about 12% unemployment yesterday, the financial mess that you can't help but hear on the news every evening when you go home. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate you having us in today.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm going to try and just, we got seven more people and not much time, so I'm going to excuse this panel and get to the rest of the folks, just so people who came here, especially not the professionals, can get up here and testify.
Thank you very much.
I've got Dave Wiley, Joe Ricker, and John Erickson. After that, I'm going to have Carl Swartz, Norm Johnson, and Adam Raymond. Then we'll have the department, and we'll be done with this bill for the time being. Welcome, gentlemen. Dave, go ahead.
Okay. My name's Chairman Clem, members of the House Ag Committee. My name's Dave Wiley. I'm a volunteer for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and I'm here today to state their position. The position of the foundation simply is that the issue discussed in this bill should be addressed by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife rather than the legislature. The distribution of hunting opportunity deserves to be analyzed on the basis of biological and wildlife management science and the hard facts, which must be objectively reviewed. It's the Fish and Wildlife Commission's responsibility to do this. They have both the authority, the responsibility, the biological professionals, and the time to do it. And there's certainly evidence today from the testimony we've heard that there's adequate reason to do so. So in conclusion, I'd like to recommend that the foundation recommends that the issue be directed to the Fish and Wildlife Department. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Joe.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Joe Ricker, Midwest Director, Oregon Hunters Association. OHA opposes House Bill 2743 for three basic reasons. First, as Representative Krieger indicated, the commission has the responsibility of managing wildlife under ORS 496012. The commission has the authority to direct the ODF&W staff to scientifically study any management issues and bring back a recommendation based on that science. OHA opposes any legislative or ballot initiatives that limit or remove the ability of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to manage Oregon's wildlife in accordance with 496012. This issue has the potential of driving a wedge between rifle hunters and bow hunters. I happen to be a rifle hunter for some 56 years. I'm another one of those old guys. I'm also a disabled veteran with 40% disability without the ability to hunt with a bow because of arm problems. But OHA's formal position is we do oppose the bill. Thank you.
Adam.
Thank you. I'm John Erickson.
John, yes, thank you.
And I've come because I was concerned about H.R. 2743 and would ask you to oppose it. I do not believe that it is good for game management. I do not believe it is good for hunting. That includes the rifle hunters as well as the bow hunters, but it's especially hard on the archer. I've been hunting since I was 4 years old. My first gun came with a cork for ammunition, and back then, by the way, ODF&W must have been doing a great job because I rarely left the house for 10 minutes, but I wasn't able to bag a big buck. It's not been the same since. I got my first official Oregon license back when there was no age restriction on it when I was 9, but I was not able to get a deer until I was 13. It took me 4 years of actual hunting to do that. I chose to go bow hunting and become a bow hunter in 1991 when my son was going to Oregon State University to give us an opportunity to hunt together. Archery does that in a unique way for people who would otherwise be separated as families. I go hunting with a bow still, primarily, though I have applied this year for another rifle tag for a unit on the east side because of the opportunity there. But I still bow hunt for the challenge and the chase and the camaraderie I have with fellow bow hunters. It's more about that than it is the big trophy. I have never harvested a large trophy in the years that I've been bow hunting. I consider myself successful, but the trophies I get are not in the Boone and Crockett book. They go into the spoon and crock pot category. I can get one.
Okay.
I was. Yep. I'm retired as a former employee of the U.S. Forest Service. I spent 6 years working in Gold Beach. Based on what I'm hearing here about the success, I believe ODF&W must be doing something right there, because in the 6 years that I worked out of Gold Beach in timber management, and I spent at least half of my time out in the field working with timber sale contractors and also doing other reconnaissance work, I never saw nearly 200 elk in that time out there. there certainly weren't in the late 80s, early 90s, that many being harvested. So to find that they're increasing at that rate would tell me, again, there's really not a need to change things in order to improve the populations of elk in that region. I don't want to see the state divided up into the haves and the have-nots, the places where we're going to do this and that, and I believe this will have a long-term detrimental and serious detrimental effect on the archers, but it'll also adversely impact rifle hunters because, first off, I am a hunter. Secondly, I'm a bow hunter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carl Schwartz, Norm Johnson, Adam Raymond, and then we actually have another 100-miler. I think it's Daryl Holland, who's here on 2742 on that list, but may want to comment on both. So let's do Carl Schwartz, Norm Johnson, Adam Raymond. Does that sound right? And I've got Carl up first.
How much are the parking tickets? No.
Probably like $14,
I guess I can handle that.
Salem's tough, too. It's my district, sorry.
My name's Carl Schwartz. I'm Vice President of Oregon Bow Hunters, and I'm a member of Oregon Hunters Association, too. And I really don't care how people hunt, but I would like to see equity. And I think that the Game Commission has done pretty well in that. If you were going to insist on equity statewide, we'd have to have a lot more bow hunting seasons. If you look at the regulations, and I would urge all of you to do that. I guess I don't know if you can do that before you vote in this committee or not, but if you look at there are hundreds of draws for rifle hunts. Very, very few for bow hunters. The people that represented this bill mentioned that they have to wait 4 or 5 years, but they could get a tag to hunt elk across the counter too. So that wasn't really just. Some people wait 15, 16 years to draw a bow tag. So I just think that we should be perfectly honest when we represent this. And I don't think that's done. When I went to Portland State to get my training to be an administrator and later a high school principal, I remember one thing that I was taught first by one of my professors, and I think it was really good. There is nothing more unfair than the equal treatment of unequals. And all of those of us who are parents know that. We can't treat our children exactly the same, the boys and the girls and the different ages and so on. There's different responsibilities, and I think you need to know that. I prepared my arguments today on the basis of the House bill, and I don't even know what it is, because it has nothing to do or very little to do with what was in the bill. Can that be read? What are we talking about now?
The amendments, you mean?
Yeah, the amendment. I'm sorry.
If we get into amendments, they'll be at another...
As changed?
Yeah.
And there'll be another hearing on amendments if we're going to have another hearing. Those would be discussed, another opportunity.
Okay. Well, the amendment as it, or the... the bill, as it is now, really doesn't... We're talking about two or three units, and it makes a huge difference as far as I'm concerned. The process right now is identical. We all apply for tax the same way. So there's no difference for... It doesn't say if you're a bow hunter, you apply this way. If you're a gun hunter, you apply a certain way. So the process is different. And I might say, too, that the opportunity is for everyone, if you want to choose to bow hunt or if you want to choose to rifle hunt. For me, I may do either one. But you have the opportunity to choose to hunt with a bow, and you have an opportunity to hunt with the rifle if you want to, and so I think that it's up to you. Another thing is kind of misrepresented, the length of the season. I don't know how many people that are bow hunters can go for 30 days or 29 days and hunt all that time. For me, it's a few days over a longer period of time that I can choose to hunt a few days, but I certainly can't go out in the woods and hunt for 30 days or the whole length of the season. If you have 5 days... For a rifle season. That's probably, if you hunt that much with a bow, you're going to exhaust the time that your wife allows you to hunt. I would think so. I've hunted with a bow and a gun from Pennsylvania and Virginia to Oregon and Idaho and into Canada. And Oregon right now is the most restrictive of all those places for bow hunters at this point. So again, I would just urge fairness all the way through and look at the regulations, each of you, and I think that you will find that it's pretty fair right now. Archers have fewer choices in many regards. There are so many differences that it's really very difficult to compare a bow hunting and rifle hunting. Rifle hunters get to shoot, as was mentioned before, 300-400 yards, and some people a greater distance is that. And many bow hunters are not definitely just after meat, but they do like the outdoor opportunities and the time of the year. They can't hunt with real bulky clothing as easily. And again, gun hunters may use the same kind of equipment as far as scent cover and range finders.
I have to ask you to wrap it up because we've got about 6-7 minutes left, and we've got two more gentlemen like to speak if we could.
All right, I'll wrap it up right now.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Norm?
Yeah, please. Thank you, Representative Clem and committee, for allowing me to speak. My name is Norm Johnson. I'm from Reedsport, Oregon. I'm a custom bow maker. I build traditional archery bows. I ship all over the country, and in the most European countries, I employ two people in my shop. I'll keep it very short. Speaking this late, I would end up echoing a lot of the sentiments of what Mr. Thompson said in the last group. But I have bow hunted for a lot of years in the state, and I, you know, Oregon's liberal archery seasons were established decades ago when the archery equipment was categorized under a primitive weapon status. The technological advancements of archery equipment today really doesn't fit the primitive weapon status anymore. You know, for the past 20 years, I've been very outspoken on unchecked technology in archery as well as firearm hunting. That being said, I still don't support this bill because even the most advanced compound bow with sights and trigger does not remotely come close to the extended range of today's long-range scoped firearms. So there are also many archers like myself across this state who still choose to hunt with traditional archery equipment that still falls within the primitive weapon status. And, are there current changes that need to be made? In my opinion, probably so. This bill in its current form, I just don't think addresses some of those issues. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. Please.
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, my name is Adam Raymond. I live at 1861 Southeast 21st Avenue, Albany, Oregon. I'm just going to try to keep this quick since we only got a few minutes left. With the technology, repeating what a couple people said, with the range finders and the clothing stuff, rifle hunting itself has come so far that you can get videos, and there's even been people here in Oregon that I know have taken deer and elk over 1,000 yards away. So, you know, I think we need to bring up about the technology of the rifles out there. Also, with about archery hunters taking older age, larger antlered animals, I don't know if there's really not enough information out there to really say that for sure, just from one taxidermy shop. I believe that, you know, what, maybe a few years down the road with the mandatory harvest, I believe that they ask or are going to be asking about the amount of points, which may help in that, so then we can find out down the road if that is true or not, if archery hunters are happen to take older aged, larger antlered animals. But then also going into how archery hunters are able to shoot female animal species or young calves and fawns. There are right now, in just the ALC unit alone, I believe there's 6 cow rifle tags. Some go as late as to the end of March. And so you're pretty much getting a 2-for-1 there. A lot of those females are pregnant. So are we going to end up taking away all those rifle hunts? Are we going to limit the rifle hunting on those seasons? So I just think that we really need, I think we this should wait. You know, the 6's unit, I don't know anything about the 6's unit, so maybe that does really need to be looked into right away. But maybe given the mandatory harvest a few years down the road, and then we can see exactly how archery stands up to rifle seasons, and then we can have a little bit more science behind this, I think would be the best bet to go. So I'm opposed to this bill.
Thank you very much. That completes our testimony on House Bill 2743. I'm going to leave the testimony open on House Bill 2742 and get Daryl Holland up here, who came from a ways on this bill. Is that person still here? Okay.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, can we get the department to get us the big game regulations and the fishing synopsis and all that stuff? I'd like to look through all that. Please.
Thank you, gentlemen.
They'll get us all around. Thank you.
And then, thank you, you three. Very good of you to come. Sorry, we're just getting running short on time. Daryl, can you come up? And then also, I know we're really short on time, but we have another person for 100 miles on a different bill. So I wanted to ask Bob Weber and Barry Bashu to come up. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2219. Just so we get a little bit from Bob and Barry, we'll have more on the LOP issue, but I don't want to make people have to come all the way back when they've come from a ways. So, Daryl, please.
Thank you very much for allowing me to come up under short notice. I will do my best to make it short and concise. My name is Daryl Holland. I'm from Powers. Most importantly, and something that I haven't heard mentioned today, was the fact that I think a lot of us are overlooking the youth and the fact that this bill itself is really more applied to the South Coast region, where Mr. Krieger feels that we have a problem. For the last 15 to 16 years, I have worked with the scouting program and teaching Safe Hunter, the BB gun programs. I've worked with Safe Hunter groups in and around the Powers area for a number of years. And my big concern is that by overlooking the opportunities provided to our young youth down the road, this is going to come back and bite us on the backside severely by not having hunt opportunities for the younger generations. And as has been suggested many times, in the South Coast area, we're limited to a success rate if you're going to be a mentor, if you will, which starts at approximately age 9, for these hunters of maybe having 2 opportunities in the South Coast if you're drawn every 3rd or 4th year before this young man or woman is out on their own. They've got numerous fish hooks that are attracting their attention, the computer industry, the video games, girls, cars, whatever, and if we lose them to those areas, we don't get them back. So having an opportunity for them to be successful, get outdoors, make a difference is really important. Listening to a lot of the testimony here today, I think from my own perspective as well as that of my child's, that a major downfall in the hunting opportunities or equity, if you will, for both the bow hunter and the rifle is that, in my opinion, ODF&W has failed the hunters of Oregon miserably. I'm very fortunate to have hunted all over the world and in many states in the United States, and we've got Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and Utah, New Mexico, Arizona, vastly outproducing trophy quality and hunt opportunities versus what we have here in Oregon. For those of you that are familiar with Oregon over the years, the Steens used to be one of the number one places in the nation for trophy mule deer. Our blacktail were second to none. Look at them now. Due to mismanagement, no plan. I'm not aware that OE&F&W has any plan for our wildlife to improve quality and trophy animals. Idaho does, New Mexico does, take care of our predators, do something that's sensible. Take sustainable numbers of tags in given areas, look at the number of bow hunters, look at the number of rifle hunters, and let's divvy those up to where they are equitable for both sides. I think that there were some valid points made here this morning that we don't want to create a war between factions. We are all hunters. The right to hunt, the right to take our children and allow them to hunt and have the same opportunities that we did as adults is very, very important. The Game Commission can take the lead by producing larger and greater numbers of animals and divide those opportunities up equally. So I think we really need to keep in track of our youth, and if no bill is perfect, but if Mr. Krieger's bill will enable this to be a start, I think it's worthy of observation. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing, House Bill 2742. So we're basically out of time. Bob, is it to come back another day? Is that a huge deal? I mean, we could take just a couple minutes and then let other folks from the organization talk when we have the next public hearing. So please,
Krieger can talk about how driving up and back.
Yeah, please. I know you've come a long way. So Barry, do you want to start? Would you rather just wait till the next hearing?
Easier for me to do it now.
Yeah, come on up. Yep. Sessions, we got 8 or 9 minutes, so we'll just get started.
Okay.
I know you came a long way too, Barry. Thank you.
This is regarding House Bill 2219, which is the LOP sunset, at least the portion of that. I'm Robert Weber, Port Arford, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I was also on the landowner preference review committee that ODFW had, which was the origin of discussed the sunset. The Oregon Hunters Association does support amending the definition of the immediate family to include spouses. That was based on the concept that grandfather wanted to take grandson, he could do that as far as the landowner preference tag, but he couldn't take his son-in-law with him, the parent of the child. So we felt that putting spouse in there was a reasonable thing to do. In terms of the areas that we don't agree with is OHA does not agree with allowing the take of buck antelope under landowner preference tags. This bill would propose allowing people with 500 or 5,000 acres or more to take buck antelope. We are opposed to that. That would result in approximately, and it isn't in this bill, there's the discussions that were had at the review committee were that it would be limited to 10% of the antelope tag total, which would be 180 tags out of the 1,700 to 1,800 tags that are now issued. In terms of the increase in transferability of landowner preference tags, the Oregon Hunters Association is opposed to that. The bill suggests that it should go from the current one-third up to one-half or more because they're rounding, the bill rounds up the odd-numbered tags. So if you were entitled to five tags, three of them would be transferable, which actually increases it more than just from one-third to one-half. So we are opposed to that. We do recognize that landowners do provide a lot of habitat and are suffering damage. We feel that the landowner preference tag program is not the place to compensate for damage, that there ought to be a separate and distinct damage control program that links transferability to actual damage as it currently is done. The transferability is a blanket transferability and has nothing to do with damage. I would also point out that the staff recommendations from ODFW to the commission were that they not adopt the buck antelope, and the ODFW staff recommendation is they leave the transferability at a third. It was the commission that bumped those up. So we feel that we should stay where it is now, not have any increased transferability and not have any buck under the LOP program. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Barry. Thanks for your patience, to both of you, all day.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barry Bashu. I farm near Gresham, Oregon, and my official title today is President of the Oregon Farm Bureau Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, representing the growers of that great organization. First and foremost, we're here to certainly support the concept of reauthorizing the LLP tag program. We recognize its value to our members, and we recognize its value to the offsets of compensation for which we have no other alternative, and certainly we would be welcome to have the Oregon legislature come up with a process to compensate us for the $158 million caused by wildlife on private lands. We would welcome that, but it doesn't appear to be any kind of alternative anytime soon. The state does own the wildlife. We recognize that, but due to a considerably undermanned staff and inability to come up with programs for management, primarily the state has abrogated the responsibility for wild management and feeding and providing habitat for over 75% of the wildlife on the backs of landowners. I am a hunter, have been since I was a child, will continue my children hunt, and so I'm fully aware of the necessity for access and ability to hunt on public lands and private where allowed. You know, oftentimes the best you can get out of compromise is mediocrity, and but I think we have an opportunity here today to perhaps put this issue to bed. I heard some of the things this gentleman prior to me spoke, and I think we could probably agree on a lot of them. Without going into a lot of detail, what I would like to suggest is maybe there's an opportunity for our organization, and I know that I've spoken with the cattlemen this morning, and they are fully in agreement with this, that maybe there'd be an opportunity for us to, with the help of one of you folks or all of you, to develop a set of amendments that would strip out the antelope buck tags. We'd be more than happy with that. That's not something we're necessarily wed to. We recognize, especially after discussions with Chair Clem, we recognize that that would increase the number of LLP tags. That's not our intent. So we would be happy to work on amendments to strip those out. We would also be happy to strip out any opportunities for increasing the number of tags that would be given to nonprofits, mentoring programs. We support all of those programs. And we would encourage our members to transfer tags to those programs, but we would not actively seek additional tags to do those programs. And in light of trying to compromise, in light of trying to put this to a bed, to avoid to have yet another work group on this, we would offer up those amendments and those proposals, and would hope that the chair and the committee would entertain that at least as an option, and we would be happy to work with the one to draft those potential amendments. So our bottom line, and perhaps the only major contention here, is our bottom line is increasing the transferability. We believe increasing the transferability gives us greater flexibility in trying to recoup some of the compensatory costs that are laid at our feet on a regular basis. And so we would work collaboratively to do that, to try to avoid even more time and more energy on that particular issue. So with that, unless you have any questions, I would be happy to withdraw and let someone else speak. Appreciate the opportunity and the time, and appreciate you recognizing me.
I do have one question.
Sure.
And these are good solutions, and we'll get some people in the room together, see if we can work something out. Do you have a sense of whether Farm Bureau members would be supportive of limiting the transferability to just Oregon residents? We have this program for guides and backpackers, and I've been talking to them about it. They said they could support that. That's not, I mean, there are plenty of Oregonians who would want to use the LLP tags, and there is a, in the guide and backpack set aside, it's only for non-residents. So there would be some symmetry if we turn to LLP. And if you don't have an answer, it's fine.
Well, it's an interesting question. I think Chair Clem, member of the committee, philosophically, it's an interesting proposal. I think our bottom line is increasing that transferability to 50%, and if it's an issue we could work out to go back to our members, I'm not sure that that would be an issue that would stop us from moving ahead with the proposed amendments that I've suggested.
Great.
Certainly.
Great.
We're all about Oregon hunters.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on... This is 2219. We're going to carry over the work sessions for 2999 and 2220. Carry over the public hearing for 2219 and 3005. And adjourn the House Committee on Ag Natural Resources and Rural Communities.